back again doing movies in black and white. Good to see you again.
Great to be here with you, Moya.
Yes, last time we were outdoors, and sorry everyone if it was too loud. You know, we're still having fun with this, so just be patient with us. One day we'll have our own recording studio with all our sets and what have you, but until now, we're just guerrilla recording, so wherever we can get in. So we're at my home, and Georgia was nice enough to come over and sit and so we can chat about what's today's movie.
The Razor's Edge.
The Razor's Edge, guys. And we know you movie fans out there, we know you like that one. That is, it is a classic starring Gene Tierney, Tyrone Power, Ann Baxter, Clifton Webb, John Payne. Just an all-star stellar cast, right?
It is. It is. It was made in 1946, and the director is Edmund Goulding, who had a very unique directing style. The producer was Daryl F. Zanuck. The designer is Ole Cassini, who also was married to star Gene Tierney. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more later.
I left out Herbert Marshall plays W.
Yes.
Somerset Maugham,
yes,
who actually wrote The Razor's Edge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you briefly the setup for this movie.
I'll get something to
drink. And the movie is about the central character. His name is Larry, and Larry has just returned from World War I. And Larry has had what I call survivor's guilt. On the very last day of the war, the irony was that his life was saved by a friend and, you know, fellow fighter, and that person lost his life, and Larry was living, and he's bewildered by this. He's shattered. He's thinking, like, what? Why did this happen? What's the meaning of life? There's
right.
got to be more to it. And so the scene opens in this party, and it just seems to be so, in, you know, life just doesn't seem to be like relevant, and it's his search for meaning in life. And this is where the movie takes off, and it takes him on this quest that he has, and his love interest does not understand that. And you see him on this journey to find meaning, and he in the travels that it takes him, but it has a ripple effect on all the other people that are in his life. And so that's what we're going to be talking about, is the movie's journey, which is about 2.5 hours. But as I was telling Moya earlier, this movie is so engrossing, it doesn't feel like it's 2.5 hours long.
No. And what year you said?
1946, right after the war.
Right, yeah, right after the war. And I don't know if Georgia wants me to say this, but you are a veteran.
I am.
And which branch?
Army.
Army. And have you ever yourself or felt the way Tyrone Power plays Larry, his character felt, or known if not you, like I said, any of your fellow veterans felt survivor's guilt? We know about PTSD, those who were in battle, and that's a different thing. But survivor's guilt can be just as crushing as if you were in the battle or got hurt or whatever. Have you had anybody or yourself experience anything like that?
Well, you know, I think I saw that somewhat in my dad, because I think he had what we now call PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and it manifested itself, and I think it kind of affected the whole family. So yeah, on a personal level, I can say, yeah, I do know of somebody who had that. My experience was during peacetime. I served in that unique era from 76 to 80 when Jimmy Carter was president.
Mm-hmm.
So I was incredibly lucky and didn't have to be deployed.
Right.
But also, if you ever experience like losing a very dear loved one unexpectedly or tragically, that can happen to you as well. And that's happened in my own family. So I can relate to what Tyrone Power's character Larry is going through in this movie. And so I find it very relevant to a lot of people. And so this movie is touching on a theme about the meaning of life.
Yes.
And one of the things that he learns when he goes and he has this, he visits with a defrocked priest, and this priest tells him that there is a holy man mm-hmm. that he goes to visit. And when he visits this holy man, he tries to lead him to discover these things for himself. But through this movie, the way it is portrayed, and it doesn't spend a whole lot of time on it, and it doesn't really matter what a person's religion mm-hmm. is, because it doesn't really say right. you have to be a certain religion or a certain right. path. It doesn't really go into that. But what it does is it shows you that the path, the reason they have the title The Razor's Edge is because they say the path to salvation is like walking on a razor's edge. Mm-hmm. And he learns through this experience that he has about the real joy and the beauty that's in life. And it makes him like learn that, you know, a lot of it is like goodness. If you can be like help other people and be really good and live your life that way, that will infuse your life with more meaning. And so he acknowledges the journey doesn't stop, it never mm-hmm. quits. But so you see this character and the effect that it has on all the other people around him.
Right. And you know, this is the time frame of the movie, and in the movie itself is post-war time. And this is a time where you're having a lot of existentialism and people thinking like that. And after every war or disaster or something like that, you know, everybody starts to think about what was it all about? You know, why did we do this? Look at the lives that were changed or destroyed. And so it was so very timely that when Mom wrote that for the World War One time frame, and then, you know, after World War II, this movie was released, because that was the thinking at the time. And, you know, we're not going to get into too much of that, but I like how you set that up, because that is the mentality of the country and the world probably at that time. And, you know, I love history, especially world history. And I'm an Anglophile, a wannabe Anglophile. And I love, post-World War One, and, you know, how the European dynasties just, you know, they really declined. Then after World War Two, they just were non-existent. And so the world changed. It literally, fortunes were lost. You could be in your European country and been, like we say, a baller, a master. And after those two world wars, you were nothing. And so it was always a time to reflect on what was it all about? Why did we even, you know, especially here in America, I could say in World War One, till this day, we, you know, what the hell were we doing then? And I think our involvement in World War One really set the stage for our involvement in World War II, while we kind of hesitated and so on, you know, like, I don't want to get too far into it. And it is, you know, the people have to have a taste or be able to ready to accept the taste of war. And, you know, it's always difficult. It's never easy. And like you were saying with Tyrone Power's character, Larry, you know, he went to see the holy man. And we were calling it Shangri-La. It was not Shangri-La. That's another movie. But it was like Shangri-La. The Lost, Horizon, maybe? That's it, The Lost Horizon. I think that was the name of it there, Shangri-La. I think that was the actual play. Yeah. But it was like that, with The Lost Horizon. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, my fellow movie buff. But, you know, that was actually Shangri-La with Ronald Coleman. So this place was kind of like that. It was a journey to get there. You had to get there, and then you got there. There's people. It was diverse. It was people from every walk of life and every culture there trying to come to terms with their lives and themselves. And so we don't want to give away too, but there was a lot of sayings at the holy man, and you know, it was good. It was new age before it was new age.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I think it started all these other movies mm-hmm. about things like that. You're right. It did.
Right.
The transcendentalism and the Middle Eastern thing, especially during the 60s, you know, hippies, they tried to...
This was
the very beginning. So this is kind of cutting, razor's edge is cutting edge. This is like where it all starts, but it does it in a way that's not all like, it's not real hippy dippy.
No.
It doesn't do that. And that's one of the things that I like about the writing of this movie, because it's just...
Yeah, Mom is a master. W. Somerset Maugham. Of course, I'm drawing blanks. He's done so many different works. Just fabulous. I'm drawing a blank. I don't know why. Look, George and I tried not to really over-script this. She is head of our research department. I'm over the tech. She does a way better job than I do. But, you know... Look, you are more than welcome to criticize us and tell us what Somerset Maugham wrote, because like I said, I am drawing a blank. I should have written it down, but we try to really just have a very rustic show here. But no, he is a master writer, and so when you look at Razor's Edge, it transcends time. So let's go back to the movie. So Tyrone Power goes to the party, totally different person.
Yes.
But we have to give some backstory, because before he went to the war, let's talk about Gene Tierney. You know, we never want to give too much away. Those two had a relationship. And am I getting the time frame wrong? Before he went to the war, they were in love. She was in love, there's no doubt. But she played this little game with Larry, Tyrone Power. If you love me, those type of games, you know, with him. And he was broke. You know, he was out of their class, you know. So, and John Payne, who she eventually winds up marrying, you know, he's always, like the comedian Chris Rock said, the calm down guy. He's what I call... the breaking case of emergency guy. The guy that's always there, that if you can't get the one you really want, well, this schlup, he's standing right there. Just marry him. So John Payne plays that guy. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that.
Yep.
But Larry was just enthralled with Gene. What's Gene Tierney's character name? I can't remember.
Isabel.
I mean, he worshipped her. But again, when people go through things like going to war or going off to college or have these adulting type situations in their life and they come back and change and the people around them have not, well, here's your story. So he comes to, then he went to, like I say, went to see the holy man. He comes back. So, and Gene Tierney now has married John Payne, but we're leaving a piece out so their circle of friends includes Ann Baxter, her husband. And so, go ahead, I'll let you, because they all meet up kind of at Isabel's wedding, at the wedding, right? When they
That's right,
yeah.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
Herbert Marshall, he's playing the writer in this in this story. So they all know each other, they're all friends, yeah.
Yes. And nothing is lost on Somerset Maugham. The way he inserts himself into this movie, he's an observer, but he's also a character in the movie.
Which is very, very unique, I would think, at the time to do that.
And Herbert Marshall plays that role in such a restrained way.
Very fine.
And he will say something that's like huge and impactful, but he does it in such
A
way that it's like, because he's so restrained, it's huge.
It's huge.
And Somerset Maugham knows that the character Isabel, even though she's marrying Gray, and because Gray is going to be able to support her in the lifestyle that she's accustomed to, he knows.
Yes.
She has still not gotten over Larry.
No, please, no.
She is still in love
with
Larry.
Not by any stretch of imagination, right.
And so she goes on to have two children with Gray, who's played by John Payne. And unfortunately, the stock market crash occurs in 1929, and he's broke, and all of the investors are broke, and he feels so horrible about it. He has a severe nervous breakdown and is plagued by headaches.
Right.
And he can't work. He can't hold down a job, anything. And so it's gotten so bad to the point to where Isabel has to sell her jewels. And But you would never really know it in a way because her, I believe he's her uncle, Elliot, lets them live in one of his, like...
This is the Clifton Webb's character.
Yeah, vacation homes. And Clifton Webb is a treasure in this movie
as
well.
Yes, yes.
And a little aside here, Clifton Webb was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And he's got some... Well, one really juicy scene that I really like, but we'll get to that a little bit later. And so the movie carries on where he comes back from his journey to India, and everybody can see
Larry
is a changed man. Right. And the scenes that you see Larry in, to me, Tyrone Power is mesmerizing.
Right, that's one of his better roles.
He is just, you can't take your eyes off of him. He does such
He glows. He's all Tyrone Power is a gorgeous man, and we were laughing earlier. So those of you, you know, this is post Super Bowl. The 49ers quarterback, Jimmy GQ Garoppolo, is gorgeous. And ESPN, I was walking through the room, I was sitting down talking to my husband, and he, of course, he's a sports fan, and a picture of Tyrone Power, and I was like, why are they talking about Tyrone Power? And it was so, and then it was like, Jimmy GQ, this is who he looks like. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he looks exactly. And then we were talking, you know, I knew we were going to talk about this movie today. And Tyrone Power was the bee's knees, honey. He, oh, just gorgeous. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've got some really great trivia for you viewers and for Moya about the director. When he was doing, we're going to go back a little bit and talk about when he was doing the scene where he meets with the holy man. Mm-hmm. And you can see that he's been... you know, he's had an epiphany, mm-hmm. you know, so an experience here where he's feeling like he's like understands like God better, and right. or like God has like moved him. Well, to get the right look on Tyrone Power, the director told him, "You will not have sexual relations before you." for days before you do
talk
this
about
scene,
suffering for
and
a
you
role.
Know what? And you know what? Tyrone Power said he did it. He went without sex. He went no
cold
sex.
Cold turkey.
He went cold turkey. But the director said he got the look, the aura on him, the look. And I thought for someone like Tyrone Power, maybe it would, I was afraid it would have had the opposite effect.
Yeah, right. You know, right, yeah, yeah.
I'm all bundled up.
Super sexy.
Reaching,
yeah.
Blah, so this man is so, yeah, he's so sexy.
So, Georgia, should that, maybe that should work for well, hell, I'll rather be wrinkled and boobs to the knees because we ain't stopping that.
Anyway. So I wanted to throw that out, but I learned that when I was researching, you know, how the director did this. But the director was somebody that Clifton Webb didn't like because he had this habit of where he would say to people in his directions, he would go, "This is how I want you to play the scene." He goes, "Now I'm going to be you for a minute. Is that okay?" Then he'd like put himself in front of the camera and say, "I'm going to be Larry," or "I'm going to be Isabel, and this is how I want you to play it." And Clifton Webb hated that. He hated it, and he kind of like, you know, made digs at the director. But hey, the movie was.
It got you an Oscar nomination.
It's a classic. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's
so
a masterpiece.
That guy, I mean,
yeah.
So he did pretty well. But they said this was a very happy set.
Yeah.
And there was such great professionalism on it.
Yeah, it clicked well. And I want to say this, don't look at the remake with Bill Murray, and don't do it. Just, you know, sometimes you can look at the remake and do, you know, I can see this. Don't do it. No offense to Bill Murray. He knows he shouldn't have done it. Because, you know, it's like, it's Hollywood at its best. It's the golden age of Hollywood. And then you had these stellar people in these performances. It's like, don't redo a Marvin Gaye song. Like, don't touch it. You know, it's like that type of
That's
stuff.
Right.
Like, it is perfect.
Yes.
There's nothing you
yes.
can... add to this movie, and it says it all. Even if you say we want to follow the book or whatever, you know, that's fine. But you don't have the right people, and it caught the zeitgeist of the time. So I want to go back. So we're not gonna forget, because you know my girl in there, Miss Ann Baxter. She is in there. That's Sophie. We're gonna talk about that. But let's just visit just for a touch. John Payne and his character Gray and Isabel Jean Tierney. let's talk about their relationship. Did you think John Payne knew that Isabel didn't love him?
Ooh, man, that's a great meaty question. I didn't see the same level of passion in their scenes or when they interacted together. And I felt that she cared for him, but I think in some core part of him,
yeah,
I think he kind of, he knows that. Because it's not just because they had a past history, but because when he comes back on the scene again, you can tell that she is...
She can't hide it. And Somerset Maugham, he sees it immediately. You can feel she... Boom! It just like the boat electricity when she sees Larry, and I think Somerset Maugham, Herbert Marshall's character, looks at, and he even warns her a couple of times, don't destroy what you have and, this type of stuff. But I'm with you. I totally agree with you. And I laugh at that. And that just shows you the mastery of the performances of these actors. Because they let the audience know we're in on it. But John Payne, and he doesn't play an idiot. He's not an idiot at all. But I think he loves Isabel so much. That, with certain relationships with people, I love you so much, it doesn't even matter, that you may have feelings, because I put you on this pedestal. She was on a pedestal to him. He worshipped her, and it never occurred, or it didn't matter, as long as she would still be in his world. And they had two kids, and their kids were big. They were maybe 6 and 4, two girls. They were living in Paris at the time, in France, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was curious to know, what did you think? Because when I look at it, doesn't he know she still loves him? But no, I don't think he had, deep down inside in the core.
He may not have admitted it to himself, but I think he had to sense
but
that.
He
had to.
I'm torn because, I don't know if it because it was Tierney's performance, or how it was written or directed, how they played it, or how he played it. Because he never let the audience know that he thought that they had
That's
anything.
Right.
So I don't think he really suspected anything.
Probably not. But, mm-hmm. To us, we see how she lights up when he comes back.
Right.
But
she's very cool, though. She's cool
very,
with
very
it.
Very cool.
Right. You have to be Somerset Maugham, really paying attention. And that's why I love, I think the audience, we have our own seat. We don't necessarily need Maugham as a conduit to the situation. But we're confirming with each other and affirming with each other what we're seeing with Maugham. Even though he's in the film, we're outside. But you're communicating with him, we're like, yep, yep. You know what I'm saying? Like that. He's our sounding board, if you will, for what's going on behind the scenes. So I want to ask you that. So let's talk about Sophie.
Yes.
Sophie, well, you go ahead and start with Sophie.
Okay, they both have this friend that they've had since childhood. Mm-hmm. Her name is Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
And Sophie is...
Anne Baxter's character.
Yes. Mm-hmm. This is such a brilliantly played role.
One of the
Sophie
best played roles.
Is the epitome...
She won an Oscar for that, I think. For this.
She did.
Yeah, Best Supporting.
She won for Best Supporting Actress. Totally deserved. And they see her at the beginning of the movie, in the party scene where everything's kind of frivolous. She's happy.
Yeah,
she's
her and her
love.
Husband. Yeah.
And she's about to be married. Mm-hmm. And she is the epitome of innocence and joy that you see on this character.
Right.
And the thing is, she later does get married and she has a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then... After, a time, there is a very tragic occurrence.
Right.
There is a horrific car accident, and Sophie is in the hospital, and it's up to Isabel's husband to tell her that her husband and a child have been killed in the accident. And she is absolutely hysterical and traumatized, right. as you can imagine.
It destroys her.
It does destroy her. It destroys her greatly. And there is a scene later on, and it leaves it there. There is a scene where Larry comes to visit Isabel, and they go out for a night on the town.
Right.
They go nightclubbing, and she decides to kind of go slumming a little bit. So she goes to like the little bit more sleazy side of town.
Yes.
They go to this like French dive bar.
Mm-hmm.
And who should they run into but Sophie? And they almost don't even recognize Sophie because she has gone through such a dramatic transformation and for the worse. And it's obvious that she is not only abusing herself with
yes.
a substance abuse,
yes.
and she's taken up with any old guy.
It was deep. It was
very.
This movie is really ahead of its time because it talks about what we talk about now. So she would be a prostitute.